Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. That's right, Dorothy. This is Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. I'm your host, Betty Jo Tucker, speaking to you from beautiful Pueblo, Colorado, and sending thanks to all our listeners. I'm so glad that you are tuned in to us because we have a very special treat for you. Our guest is two-time Emmy nominee, Tanya Lee Williams, known primarily for her longstanding role as Dr. Olivia Winters on Young and the Restless, which, by the way, just happens to be my favorite TV soap opera. Tanya has also appeared in a variety of films and other television series. Her newest acting adventure involves playing Constance Meade, a senior U.S. Department of Homeland Security agent, on the exciting Canadian TV drama, The Border. Welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters, Tanya.
Thank you so much. My pleasure to be here.
Well, it's exciting to have you as a guest. I have to admit, being a fan of yours for a long time.
Awesome.
In fact, I'm not only a movie addict, but also a Young and the Restless addict.
<That's the best. laughs>
And I just love your work on that show.
Thank
but
you.
Okay, I'm going to calm down now and be professional and ask you, what motivated you to become an actress? I'm certainly glad you did, but what was there that drew you to this profession?
It's always such a good question, and I don't know if other people had a defining moment. I didn't have a defining moment, maybe because I started in the business as young as I did. It really started more for fun. I'd always, as a kid, done a lot of piano lessons and ballet lessons, and you know, it was just the thing that parents sometimes do for their children just to give them exposure, but it certainly wasn't that I thought this was what I was going to be doing with my life in any way. These were just extracurricular activities. But then somewhere in high school, I think I took a modeling course that my mother probably signed me up for, more for a young woman to learn more about how to walk and how to put on makeup and how to sort of present herself, not even also thinking that that might be a career move in any way. And the place that I had taken the course was called Judy Welch, and she also had an agency. And after I finished the course, and I think I was 15 or so, she had asked my mother if she could put me in her agency side and send me out. And my mother really wasn't thinking that much. She's like, sure, you know, if somehow it fits in something that's on a weekend or after school, and she would drive me to it because we were living in Oshawa at the time, and this was all happening in Toronto. So every just once in a blue moon, there'd be an audition. It wasn't that many, like a couple a year kind of a thing. And my mother would put me in the car and we would just go. And it was like an outing and it was fun.
She doesn't sound like a stage mother. She's definitely
not at all. No, in fact, my parents are Jamaican. And the last thing, you know, a lot of Caribbean think of for their children is the entertainment industry. It's like it's way down on the totem pole. I mean, most Caribbean parents are thinking of their children graduating in a profession. My father was a judge. You know, my mother was a nurse.
Oh.
My father thought I'd be an attorney, or that, you know, these are the things they think of for their children. So these extracurricular things are just to give them life lessons and exposure. That's what they're thinking. But I did it through high school, and it was just fun for me. I never took it seriously. And after high school, I took a year off, and for some reason met a lot of people in the industry. You know, I think the universe has a way of taking you where it needs to take you. And a lot of my friends were young actors, and they were all thinking about where they wanted to go to theater school, and some were going to go to Montreal, and some were going to go to Ryerson Drama Program, and some were looking into RADA in London. And so I kind of got caught up in just listening to them. But after a year of doing the things that I was doing, I really started to have a respect for acting and for actors and for what they did. And then I applied to Ryerson Drama Program, and to the chagrin of my father, by the way.
And oh boy.
And my mother always just being like, you know, moms are the supportive people. She was just whatever it is you want to do, just do it as best as you can, you know, just do it well.
And be happy.
and be happy, exactly.
Right.
So that's how it really started for me. And you know, it was no overnight success. I was in a drama program, and I studied and understood and grew to love working in character work. And I said to someone recently, I wish they taught you, though, in drama school, because they don't teach you this about what happens if you become successful, because that's not something that's actually in your mind at all.
Right. What
you're thinking about is how wonderful to become these characters and to be either on stage or on camera, and you're doing this work, and then later on in life you have to deal with all this business stuff. It's why it's called show business, which had nothing to do with what you actually studied in drama school. And that became a whole, you know, other learning curve as well. So that was really my beginning, and I did a lot of, you know, stage and small parts in movies and television shows and things in my early 20s, and it was just a progression. It's just working at any job. I really see acting as a craft. I see it as the kind of job where people used to be apprentices and
mm-hmm.
used to work under someone who would be a master. And you would hone and hone your craft. And I think, I'm a real believer that anybody can act, by the way. I don't believe it's a select few that can act. I believe anybody can act if you have the passion and the determination to act, and that you work at it as you would if you were, you know, if you chiseled wood. I'm sure the first time you chisel a piece of wood, it doesn't look like anything. But if you were to keep at it and honing your craft, you could become an amazing woodwork person. It's the same with
yes.
acting.
That's a very interesting way to look at it. And would you believe it? We already have a call, and I believe it's my co-host, my
cool.
tardy co-host, Jazz Shaw. So I know he's so interested in your views about acting. He's kind of a movie addict himself, and has had some experience in front of the camera and behind the camera.
Wonderful.
So I'm going to call on Jazz right now. Hi, Jazz.
Hi, Betty Jo. Yes, I am late, and I am so sorry for that. I obviously need a new alarm clock for my various appearances.
Well, say hello to Tanya Lee Williams.
Yes, Tanya, it's very nice to hear you and to talk to you. I'm sorry I wasn't here for the sound check.
That's okay. It's nice to talk to you, too.
And I know that Jazz has, we were just, you probably heard, you were listening on the phone, you probably heard Tanya, I always want to call Tanya Olivia, because I feel like I know Olivia.
Well, you know what, for today you can.
Still
thank you.
thank you,
that's right. I mean, I just, you know, she's just like a member of the family here. So
I was just
be
hearing the other day that Jennifer Anderson was doing an interview and said people still call her Rachel. So,
oh,
and how many years has that been, right?
Exactly.
that's been a long time. But Tanya has such an interesting background as to how she got into acting. And I was quite happy to hear that her mother was not a stage mother, even though Tanya was, you know, doing some modeling and doing auditions and everything, because I think that explains why you're so well adjusted now. And I'm wondering, Jazz, did you have a question that you'd like to ask Tanya?
Oh, quite a few. I've been reading up and going into the archives this week. One thing that came out right away was you've done the full spectrum, unlike some of the people we've talked to. You worked stage, you worked television, you worked films. And having done all that, particularly for other people who might be getting into the craft, is there one that you like better, that you take more from the experience, or is it all pretty much just a day's work?
You know what? It's It's all different, but I like it all for different reasons and at different times. It's like when you look in your wardrobe, and yes, you have suits, and then you have, you know, gym wear, and you have, you know, casual clothes for the weekend, and it's not like you might like some better than the other, but for specific reasons, there some fit other times. So I use my work as an actor to actually understand more about myself. It's almost like if you take an acting class, a group class, it's not really that much different than group therapy, actually. Hmm. So when you get a character, when I'm reading the character and when I'm reading the story, and I don't care if it's stage or film or television, I'm reading the character first, I'm reading the story first, and I need to understand what's going on. I need to have compassion. I need to know what this character is thinking, being how they are. And then I need it to connect to something in my own life so that I can learn and grow in some way from the experience, because then I can delve even deeper into the character, because it's like going into psychotherapy for yourself when you go into it. So depending on what's going on in my life, each one of those gives you something different. Like stage
right.
Is so immediate, and it's so on the fly. You know, it's happening. It's a present, very present place to be. And that is sometimes important in our lives at times. Film is something that moves so slowly that there's so much time for reflection while you're doing it in what is going on around you. You're almost like a voyeur most of the time, because your one little scene, it's so interesting. When you're shooting a movie, in a whole day, it might literally take a whole day to shoot 2 minutes of the movie.
Oh, my
gosh. So you're spending the whole day watching the process.
Right.
You're sitting there, and you're watching the lighting people get all this equipment up, and the cameras getting ready and whatever. And there's something about that that I find interesting to watch. But it's not the same as standing on stage, because it is all happening fast and furious, and everything must be fired, all your synapses.
Well, you've told us the stuff you really like about being an actress, but no job is perfect. Is there a downside that you found, and anything about working professionally as an actress that maybe is not so favorite for you?
Yeah, I don't like the business part of it. And the more you work and the more years you spend in the business, the more you'll actually one day sit down and it feels like 10% of your life is going into the creativity of your work. And 90% is just the business stuff. So 90% becomes interviews, you know.
Oh.
Financing, budgeting.
Well, we'll try to cut this short.
No, we won't. No way.
I mean, it's important, though, because it allows you the other stuff. But there's a time in your life, and I've been in the business over 30 years, where you kind of stop. It's almost like a midlife crisis, really, and go, I need to get that 10% up. A little bit more, and
right.
I need to get the other part down. And trying to navigate that and stay, because staying alive in the business, meaning making sure that work is coming to you, requires that other 90% of the business stuff to be happening. So I don't know how it worked in the old days, but I have a feeling that there were people that took care of a lot of that. And these days,
right.
Actors need to be as involved in that as possible. And so I'm still struggling with that all the time, to make that work and not lose the creativity of
that makes sense to me. That
yep.
Because it's the same thing, Jazz, when you're writing, you know, if because you do a lot of writing, and that I like the 90%, 10% analogy.
Well, I just spoke to a screenwriter the other day, and that's what she actually said. Because she produces her own work as well. And she said she just had a meltdown a couple of weeks ago because she said, I've not written anything in 10 months. Because the thing
wow.
I wrote last year, I've spent the whole year trying to get it made, that I'm depleted because creatively I just need. And she just went and locked herself in her condo for like a week and just wrote, because that can dry up. And that's the reason you got into business in the first part, was the creativity part of it.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's very well said. And
well, directors run into the same thing, right? Betty Jo, we've talked to quite a few who have said, you know, you throw yourself with a passion into making, you know, the great work of your life, and then once it's done, now is the endless barrage of getting the distribution and talking to the money people.
Absolutely.
you know, dealing with all that side of it, and it can really take the wind out of yourself.
Well, I've talked to directors who have literally, I've seen them at a film festival, and they look exhausted, and I'm like, what are you working on? They're like, nothing. They go, I've been traveling for 2 years with this film, you know, just traveling from festival to festival and meeting to meeting, and they're frustrated because they want to get behind the camera and make another film.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. In fact, speaking of the film festival, that's a nice segue into what I wanted to find out from you about one of my favorite actors, Danny Glover, who I happened to meet at one of the Telluride film festivals, and he looked a little exhausted, too.
I have no idea how Danny functions. I don't know how he functions because I did a movie with him a couple of years ago in Nova Scotia called Poor Boy's Game, and while he was doing that movie, he was doing another movie in Vancouver. Like, can you understand, like, across the country, you know, within in three time zones difference, and he was going back and forth. I was exhausted just doing the movie in Nova Scotia, just that alone, and I'm younger than Danny, and so he is on a plane every day, and sometimes I'll just call him out of blue, because we stay in touch every once in a while since the movie, and my first question is always, where are you now? And he'll be, oh, South Africa, but then tomorrow I'll be in Costa Rico. But then 3 days from there, I'll be in L.A. for like 24 hours. I have no idea. His whole life is like that, and I insist my life never be that, but his life really is that.
I think you're right about that. Could you tell us a little bit about Poor Boy's Game? I haven't seen it. Have you, Jazz?
Nope, not yet.
And
oh,
run
out and get it on DVD, or you can get it at Blockbuster. It's directed by Clement Virgo, who's one of our really wonderful directors in Canada. It starred also Danny Glover. It's got Rossif Sutherland, who is Kiefer Sutherland's brother, Donald Sutherland's son. I'm in it. I'm trying to remember some of the other. Oh, Casey Collins. I think he was nominated last year for a Gemini Award for his work in, is it Doomstown? It was a miniseries that that was on in Canada last year. So it's a wonderful movie, and I had the pleasure to, Danny and I play husband and wife, and the story, it's two separate sort of stories paralleling each other, but my side, I'm on one of the stories, which is about my son, who used to be a junior boxer, and who now suffers brain damage. And it's a very racially charged movie. And it's about sort of retribution and vengeance and all kinds of those interesting things. But I think it's some of Danny's best work I've ever seen.
I have to put that on my Netflix list right now. Mm.
Yeah, it's a wonderful movie. And once again, supporting Canadian talent on every level.
Right. Yeah,
by watching.
Definitely you're wanting people to do. Well, we'll recommend Poor Boy's Game to all of our listeners, and we'll put the DVD cover on our site so that everyone can click on that and take them right to Amazon.com to buy the DVD. So thanks for telling us about that. And now I just absolutely have to ask you about Olivia Winters and how did you obtain the role of Olivia Winters on Young and the Restless?
You know, it was wonderful. I had arrived in Los Angeles in, I think, around 87. And I arrived, and I did a really, I did a movie called, what was it called? That was for Disney. I can't believe I can't remember. Anyway, it'll come to me when I'm not thinking about it. It'll come to me. But after I did that movie, and that was like the first couple of months of me getting here, the worst writer strike happened for like 6 months.
Oh.
It was 87 and it happened. So I thought, well, there's really no point in me being here. So I went back to Toronto. And then after the writer's strike was over, I came back and I did a series of lots of guest spots here and there and whatever. But I was working here on a visa. And, you know, the quest for every Canadian when they come down here is how to get the green card. and you can't get the green card unless you're in a job that by the time you applied and by the time you get your interview, which could be a year later, you need to be at the same job. You know, they work it like it's a regular, like you were a doctor in a hospital, but you're actors, and how often are you in the same job a year later?
That has happened to so many people, particularly with Canadians. That is not an unusual story. Evangeline Lilly almost lost her job, her role on Lost, because she had done the audition. They loved her. They wanted her. She did not have a green card. Everyone else was in Hawaii. They were still waiting to get approval, and she almost didn't get that role.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real struggle, you know. So what happens when you have an agent is they have an agenda and you have an agenda. So my agenda was I need to get my green card, and their agenda is to get me, you know, bigger shows. You know, agents are not thinking when they have new talent, they're not necessarily thinking get them on daytime. That is really not the first thought in their heads. They're trying to get them in movies and then prime time. So when the audition came up for Generations, and it wasn't for a very long role, but I asked my agent to put me in for it, and they didn't really want me to go, but I went, and it was fun. I liked it. I enjoyed it, working with an actor I'd never met before called Christoph St. John.
Oh, guess who? Neil Winters.
We played like girlfriend, boyfriend for like literally 6-7 shows. It was a really short-term thing. I was supposed to come in to just mix things up with some relationship he was having with someone else on the show. And then a few months later, another audition came up for the show called The Young and the Restless for the part of Drusilla. So I say to my agent, you know, I want to go in on it. I actually read the script and I think, I really can't stand this character. Because as a black actor, it's like all I try to do is not stereotypical work. Like it's my mantra. It's like, so the minute I see this character, she's like, she's black, she's homeless, she's illiterate. She's like, I'm looking at this going, this is like terrible. This is every stereotype that was going on in the late 80s, early 90s. So,
good for you.
So I decide, yes, though, that I'm going in on this role, but I'm not going to play her like all Ebonics and hometown. I'm going to play her like I'm talking to you right now. I decide I'm not going to play her street. Because I assume there must be homeless people who are educated and ended up being homeless. So I just made that choice as an actor. So I go in for the audition, and I get a call 3 days later from my agent saying, they want to see you again, but it's a role called Olivia. So, and I read this role now, and it's like, she's a doctor, and she's very professional, whatever, and I'm like, okay, this is more like it. So now I go in,
for sure.
Now I go in and I read for this role, and then as I was leaving the audition, they call me back in, because you read for Bill Bell. That was what was great in those days. There was no process where you read for this person, then another person, then you were on tape, and then the networks had to approve you. Bill Bell was God. So if Bill Bell saw you and Bill Bell wanted you, nobody questioned his judgment.
No way.
When I was leaving the audition and going to the elevator, the casting person called me back and asked me to sit and wait in the waiting room. And I sat there when they went through the other audition. And then when the other auditions had finished, they asked me to go up to wardrobe, and then I had the part. So I went upstairs to wardrobe.
I was waiting for the horrible ending to the story where you're on day three, they hand you the script, and
it turns out
that Olivia has now lost her job as a doctor and she's homeless.
No, it was all wonderful. But what was funny was a year later, I said to Bill, I didn't know how this all happened or whatever, and he told me a story of how when I came in for Drusilla, it was when he saw me as Drusilla, he came up with the idea for his sister.
Oh. So you were actually the inspiration. You were
the inspiration
for Olivia.
The character, because he liked the idea of having this polished, sort of professional woman, juxtaposed against a sister who was very street and illiterate. So it actually. I always say that to actors now. It's, you really have to make a stand of what it is you believe in, and then you just have to go in there. And it may not work, and it may work.
Now that may make the next question a lot tougher, but you say you were at least partially the inspiration for the role. How would you describe Olivia as, you know, not being her, but from the outside, the character Olivia, and what qualities are there in her that you think you really draw from that are just you?
The character I developed has some qualities that are me, and it has some qualities that I wish were me, and has some qualities that annoy me in other people. So, because you need to make a full dimensional character. Mm-hmm. So the qualities that I like about her is how organized. You know, she seems like someone who knows how to, you know, time manage and organize and has a very clear direction of where she's going and how she's going to do it. and is very, I'm the complete opposite of that. I live in a space of, I know I'm on the right track, but I couldn't tell you on paper what that right track is. I know that I'm heading towards something, but I can't give you any clarity as to what that thing is I'm heading for. I see Olivia as very, she's religious in a fundamental way, whereas I'm spiritual in a very unfundamental way. So we're very different in those ways. How we're similar is we look for the good in people. I really look for the good in people, and I put that in every character. She looks for the good in people, and we both try to do our best, even though it may fall short of what best really is, but we try to do it. So I like those qualities, so I tend to put them in characters, even if they're bad and evil characters. They're still trying to do their best. We physically don't seem to look the same because Christoph told me one time, he goes, you actually walk different as Olivia, because I actually put Olivia in heels and I wouldn't be caught dead in heels. So, so she wears clothes I would never wear. She wears her hair in a way I would never wear it. Our makeup is very different. So I physically create, and I insist on doing my own hair and makeup on the show because as I'm getting ready, I'm becoming her, like getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's one you don't hear very often. Well, I don't really look very much like my character.
And you know what? I think I believe that, too, because fans rarely recognize me. Like,
really?
Rarely recognize me. When I'm going around as me, I dress as Olivia if I'm going to a function, you know, that I know is like an Olivia-type function. But but when I'm running around as me, people look at me, and then they'll say, and they always say this, you kind of look like this actress. Who plays the character Olivia on The Young and the Restless? And I'll say,
oh, I love, well.
I go, it's me. And they'll be like, no. Because they're really looking at me because I don't look like Olivia would dress in any way or physically. Oh, I am.
Whatever you've done. Whatever you've said. I think we're getting a little bit of feedback.
Yeah, a little bit of slap back there.
Oh, okay.
I got to admit, your story did remind me very briefly of one that Jerry Seinfeld used to tell when he was first starting out, the first year the show was taking off, and he ran into somebody in New York on the street, and they walked up to him and went, hey, you're, and he goes, Jerry Seinfeld, and the person goes, no. And,
well, whatever you...
And I was actually going to say, and the annoying qualities to me is how she can be, she allows herself to be victimized a lot, and I find that an annoying quality in people when they look to be a victim of whatever the circumstances are. And when she was going through her whole thing about her husband, about you know, Malcolm not seeing her son, I find those qualities really detestable in people.
Mm-hmm.
when it's someone else's fault all the time and they can't take their own responsibility. So I develop that in her. As something that I can't stand.
Well, whatever you've done with this character, I absolutely love her, and I wish that she had more time on Young and the Restless. So I'm wondering if you're at liberty to tell us what might be up for Olivia in the near future.
You know what? I don't know what's going on. There's so many changes on the show recently. I'm hoping that they work me more. You know, there's I'm sure you've heard, there's financial things happening on daytime that are
yes.
things really challenging for production. And I think they're doing their best to try and make it through these rough waters. And I totally understand that as from a business sense, because I understand how the business works. So I definitely want to work more, and I definitely know they have to figure out how that works in dollars and cents and with characters that they already have. So I would love to work more, though. I took some time off because I was burnt out. After 15 years on the show, I took, which I thought would be 1 year, but I actually took 3 years off because I needed it. And and just traveled and lived and was just a person. And I needed that. And I came back to the show last September with a renewed energy for the show, because I'm approaching my character and my work on the show, and more of the business, the work on the show, very differently than I was in the first 15 years. In the worst 15 years, the first forced 15 years, the first 15 years, it really felt like I was eating, breathing, living it 24/7. And
oh, yes.
it consumed me. And I felt that my time off gave me an ability to step back and come back now with a perspective where I work, but I'm not eating and breathing it in the same way.
Well, good for you. There is an opening in the plot, though, right now, because Neil, he's kind of on the outs with his girlfriend, and Olivia is back, and I want them to get together.
Let's make it happen. You know what was so funny is one of my shows that I did a few months ago, they had a line that I said to the Tara character where I think I said something like, when Neil and I used to go out. And so I had to call up the show and I go, when did Neil and I go out? Like, when did that happen? And they're like, didn't it happen? And I go, no, it's so funny. The characters have known each other so long, it seems like they dated at some point. But they didn't, you know, at the very beginning of the show, when he first came on, it was about him chasing the character. But I was completely into Nathan, so I was not feeling Neil at all, but he was
right
after me. And then years later, he had a fantasy dream that we slept together.
Right.
A dream in his head, but it never happened. And then years later, Malcolm walks in on me sleeping in Neil's bed, thinking that we did something, but Neil had slept on the couch. But between those three things, there was a feeling that something had happened between Neil and Olivia, but nothing ever actually has happened between
them. We form our own memories that way. How far ahead of time do you get the scripts? I mean, if they decide they're going to drop Olivia down an elevator shaft one of these days, how far ahead do you know it?
I probably would know a week ahead.
Oh, gosh.
That would be it.
They don't give you any chance to prepare. Well, we're going to work on making it happen that Olivia and Neil get together, but we really need to turn now to your new acting adventure, which is playing Constance Meade on The Border. Now, that's a very different character from Olivia, according to the way it's described in the press. So tell us a little bit about Constance and about The Border and what kind of challenges there are in playing this new role.
You know what, I really enjoy, I was watching the show already in Canada, so whenever I would come up, I would catch it. It's now going into its third season, so I was really surprised when they called and asked me about this role. It's very exciting, and what I really liked about, I've only shot three episodes and out of the eight so far, and because I'm a recurring on it, and my role, I'm not a huge role in it, I just really enjoy doing the role. And they shot me in Washington for authenticity, which I love. So they flew me up to Washington. And,
great.
You know, so that all the scenery behind me is real. You know, it doesn't look like I'm in some office with a backdrop. I'm out on the road, usually on a cell phone. A lot of the show is on cell phone, as you can see, because that's how, you know, that's how government people all work. We're on cell phones all the time. But you'd be surprised. She's not that much different than Olivia, to tell you the truth, because she's a professional black woman. She's a professional black women, and I say that and emphasize that because, you know, now there's a president of the United States who's black, but if you look at the last 50 years, people being professional, doctors and lawyers who were people of color, probably all share a very similar quality. You know, they had to work through insurmountable odds to get to where they needed to get to. So that, I immediately can drop that into any character that I do that's a professional because I understand that struggle. And you want the edge of that struggle. You know, the whole time that Obama was talking, I remember that people would say, he's got such an arrogant tone. You know, there's an arrogance to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would remind people, you would have to be arrogant to be a black man and decide that you're going to run for the president of the United States. I mean, your whole life would have to build up a certain shield and field around you so that the masses that are telling you something is impossible, you ignore and decide you're better than that. So that
good point.
that challenge never really changes, and Betty Jo and I talked about that before.
Exists in Constant Meat as well.
Exactly, and look at if people like Chris Rock was telling the story very recently that he lives in a very exclusive, very rich neighborhood. Extremely.
I heard the story, and I love it.
Rich.
You can tell it. Yeah.
And he's apparently one of two black people in the entire area, and he goes, and I'm one of the richest, most famous black comedians comedians in the world. My neighbor is a dentist.
Exactly.
And he's not even the best dentist in this county. You know?
I love when he tells that story because it's so true. It's so true.
Now, you have another project coming up before I use up Betty Jo's entire show, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the Real World Film Festival and your work as the executive director.
Yeah, well, I founded the festival in 2001. So what's exciting about next year, April 14th to the 18th, our festival 2010, is it's our 10th anniversary. And that is just I'm so proud of that. I'm so proud of the work that my staff and all the volunteers and board members do to make that happen, because it's not an easy thing putting a film festival together. When you put a film festival together, it's pure, it's heart and blood and sweat and tears. There's no other agenda except the agenda of the initiative, because there's really no money to be made in film festivals. It is truly that you want to create an initiative that helps others, and that was what the festival was always about. Real World, I created a mandate that specifically helps visible minorities, and that's the diversity we focus on. People from Aboriginal and Asian, Black, Latino, Middle Eastern, South Asian, and other multiracial communities, that's our focus. And I try to make the larger part of the festival about Canadians. We do bring in some international, but it really is about how do we get our own Indigenous filmmakers of color, you know, how do we get them going? How do we get these products out there? How do we get it to be, have them have careers, and that these stories can be told. So that's really what the festival is about, and it's been a tough, really brutal, just endless hard work, and we work all year so that we can have 5 days of complete joy and reward, and then we start again for almost 12 more months of grueling slave labor, and then we have 5 days of this amazing event. So
when is the next one, Tanya?
April 14th to the 18th, 2010. And
it's held where?
It's held in Toronto. For the last 4 years, we've done it at the Carlton Cinemas. We'll probably do it there again. But going on the website at realworld.ca is the best way to get all the information, including submissions. Calling out right now, filmmakers, if you fit within our mandate, submission deadline is December 5th, 2009, so we're getting in submissions now. And it's a wonderful festival with not only screenings but industry panels and an assortment of networking brunches and awards ceremonies. So, you know, it's we welcome everyone to come. Hope you
darn it, I knew I should have moved to Canada.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, not only Canada but Toronto, because Toronto has 70, last count, 70 film festivals in the city alone. So
wow.
That's a coup in itself, including one of the world-famous Toronto International Film Festivals.
And for a long time now, American production companies have been doing so much work in Toronto and other areas in Canada just because it's so much cheaper than the old tried-and-true areas in the United States that are charging them an arm and a leg.
Exactly, but that's fast becoming, you know, not a reality anymore. The dollar's almost on par with a Canadian dollar now, and there's so many states in the United States, New Mexico for one, that have such amazing incentives now that, you know, a lot of productions are staying here. And for a long time, people were giving Canada a really bad rap, like all these runaway productions going to Canada. And I'm like, who does that marketing? Because that's really good. Because no one talks about Prague and all the other places, you know, South Africa and Namibia. They go all over the world to shoot wherever it's cheap. But for some reason, Canada was getting the bad rap. And I'm like, how did all the other countries get out from getting the bad rap?
There's somebody doing all the business there to get it
to
get
someone
it going.
Someone has it in for Canada.
Tourism.
Well, I don't know how you find time to do all of these things. You're so busy, and I just have to congratulate you on these well-deserved awards that you've received. I was going through the list here. You won the 2 NAACP Image Awards. You won the Howard University's Legacy of Leadership Award. And then this next award, the ACTRA Award of Excellence, which I think is one of the highest achievement awards for any actor in Canada.
Thank you.
And the African Canadian Achievement Award. this list is quite impressive. So you're definitely being recognized as a woman of great significance and importance, and so kudos.
I really am. I'm fortunate because, you know, you dream that you want to do something in the arts like you do, and then to be able to just do it. That was always my goal. My goal, and still is, has never been to be a huge star, because honestly, I see that as so much work. I actually see that as a lot of work. I look at the Halle Berrys or the Tom Cruises, and I feel for them. I'm so grateful that they're there. I applaud that they actually do that. But it's a lot of work to be at that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely it is, yeah. And that settles it, Betty Jo. I am canceling my subscription to Blame Canada Weekly.
Okay, I think I will too. Hooray for Canada. I hope that our listeners will check out your great website at www.TanyaLeeWilliams.com, and that's TanyaLeeWilliams.com. In fact, we'll put the link in the chat room so that they can find more information about you. I love that site. The pictures, the photos there are especially beautiful. So,
oh, thank you.
I'm encouraging all our listeners to check out that
Yes, and make sure you get the spelling right, because the T-O threw me off the first time when I was getting ready for this. So.
I know. So a T-O-N-Y-A. And we like to ask this question of all our guests, Tanya. You've answered it a little bit for us, but what is the most important thing you want people to know about you and your work?
That I played characters to inspire people, and that I really try to stay away from stereotypes.
And you play the characters so well. I can't believe this. I mean, we've just had such fun and such enlightenment talking with you, Tanya, but our time is almost up, and we thank you so much for visiting our show, and we wish you the best of luck with The Border, as well as with all your other impressive projects. And maybe Jazz and I will save up enough money and have some time and be able to take in one of your real-world film festivals.
Okay.
That would be great.
A worthy goal for us to to aim at.
I'm usually lucky just to get to Tribeca, so it would be nice to get up there and do something different. You know?
Exactly.
Oh, it would be. I'd like to be there and to meet you in person. And I almost said Olivia, but it is Tanya. It was our great pleasure and honor to have you as a guest.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And please come back again. And we'll talk more about your acting and about your projects.
I would love to.
I know there's a lot more that we would like to ask you and that you have to share with us. This is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout-out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for all their support in connection with this show. Special thanks, as always, to Nikki Starr, our producer extraordinaire, and to Jazz Shaw, even though he was a bit tardy today, for everything they do to make Movie Addict Headquarters such a treat to host. Thanks also to all our listeners, whether tuning in live or to the archives or participating in the chat. We really appreciate your support. Please come back next time for another lively discussion about movies. In the meantime, don't you forget to check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. Now, as usual, to close the show, here's the talented A.J. Daniels with a song we dedicate to all our Blog Talk Radio listeners, and today especially to Tanya Lee Williams.
Stay with me and be true. shall love you.